For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. I'm pre-recording this show due to a family obligation, so that said, you won't be able to dial in today for all those regular callers that like to call in every week. I will not be in the studio, so no point in calling. That said, if you cannot listen to this entire show today, this show will be rebroadcasted this Saturday at 1 p.m., as I always say, many parts of these shows will refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other. Consequently, to stay abreast with our content, you will need to listen to all of these shows to garner what Republic Review is and how we can claim, or how we can reclaim the Republic per the show. So don't forget, you can download the podcast at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, or you can listen to the rebroadcast this Saturday. Local announcements, we have the Republican Coffee Club at 7 a.m. this Friday, and on Friday the 23rd, John Penderson, the director of the Spokane County Planning Department, will be having his spiel for the Republican Coffee Club. So if you've got questions, you want to know why they're doing something, I would, say this is a great time to be there. Next week, it'll be Matt Close. He's the Agricultural Forestry Training Future Leaders, and they're basically going through teaching on the agricultural forestry and natural resources for their new wave of leaders. The cost of admission is $5 for the venue and $1 for the donut, so it's basically $6 if you're going to indulge in the donut. And the venue is at Bangkok Thai Restaurant inside the Noli Brew House, and that's on Hamilton and Trent. The Grassroots Northwest Next Movie Night, it's not this week like usual. I've actually got a heads up on this. And next month, it will be the candidates that are running for office. So they're going to have all the candidates down there. So this is a must-attend event if you want to meet and support the candidates. I would recommend supporting those who are not trying to create big government or the progressive programs here in Spokane, and supporting businesses large and small to invest and help Spokane grow. This Saturday, June 24th, from 2 to 4, there will be a Spirit of America rally hosted by the Spirit of America Rally, Eastern Washington and North Idaho. We have seen way too many anarchists, communists, and progressives marching like children demanding their free stuff. So please take the time to get out to this and support your liberty and your sovereignty. Let's use this march to send a message to the progressives and our elected servants that we are no longer going to surrender our liberties, and we are here to vote out any and all progressives who seek to enslave us, because that is their policy. And actually, I'm going to get into that a little bit later. So if I haven't said this enough, this is a very important election. So let this event send a message that we constitutionalists, libertarians, Republicans are united on using the Constitution as our shield and our weapon. Again, please support all these groups that I'm giving you insights to, and hopefully you can become a part of, and at least provide them with, you know, whatever resources or services that you can as you support them. It costs money to make things happen, as George Washington realized in fighting the Revolution. Again, this is a very, very critical election. As I spoke, I believe it was last week, where I talked about Safer Spokane, where they were trying to contrive some ability in taxing and fining interstate commerce that's coming across the rail line. And like I said, this is just going to cost us as a city, an insurmountable legal fees as we go up against the federal government and these other businesses and so forth, because we can't do that. The Constitution does not allow cities or states to tax or fine anybody's commerce flowing through them, especially, you know, since it's been happening for, a century? They've been moving coal and oil and so forth through here. So we have to start taking a stand. So I'm hoping, I'm praying that we're all praying to do what we can do in getting the right people into office, and that would be those who want to support your individual liberty and sovereignty and protect it and protect our Constitution against federal tyranny, state tyranny, and local tyranny. Future guests I hope to have on this show, and I was actually hoping to have on this show in particular, was going to be Aaron Tilbury from the Jonah Project. And I wanted you to get a chance to meet him, understand what he's doing, why I consider him a hero, and people that do like what he does, truly heroes, because they put themselves in harm's way, and it's not like they get hazard duty pay, you know, and anything like that. It is a true first responder to a true crisis that is slipping through the cracks. I also hope to have Trevor Lawton, the author of The Enemy Within. There's also a movie, The Enemy Within, that's out as well. And Trevor just recently, I believe, flew out to Montana to assist in helping somebody get elected to ensure that a communist didn't get elected. And, you know, I know I use the word communist, and I know that's a kind of a sensitive word, but there's no other way to describe these. The other word would be Platonist, and I'll get into that a little bit. But the point is that when we're looking at the people that want the state to do anything and everything for us, then we're looking at communism, whether it's by revolution and by looking at what's going on in the streets. We are seeing a revolution. They're trying to make a revolution. And this is a small minority of the people. We cannot allow them to instill fear and try to get us to surrender our rights and our liberties. Anyway, another guest I hope to have would be Jim DeMint. I'm hoping to have Dr. Glenn Kember. He has the Kember Academy, and he also runs the Thomas Jefferson Center that's local here. I'm also hoping to have Dr. John R. Vile. He's the Dean of Political Science and out of Middle Tennessee University, and he's written 30-some-odd books about the Constitution. He's actually cited my books in his work, and so I hope to have him on. I also hope to have John Hancock, not the John Hancock. I think his signature is a little bit different, but still, his name's John Hancock. He's an author that has a very interesting perspective on history. And that's just to name a few. I'm hoping to get stacked up with guests that will actually give you the insights and what I believe is going to be supportive of, you know, my executive summary and Republic Review and so forth, even though they may never have heard of it. Some of these have, but some of them haven't. And some of them have their own mission, and it's sometimes not about me. It's about them, like Aaron Tilbury with the Jonah Project. So anyway, I am looking to have all of these great guests come on. I want to thank all of you, as I usually do, for taking your time and tuning in. I hope you find that this is an educational program, and hopefully it motivates you in doing what we need to do in reclaiming the Republic. As I hear the music coming up on our first break, please stay tuned. We'll be right back, and I will be getting into some Federalist Papers, but I'm going to get into Platonism as well. So stay tuned. I'll be right back. we're back. And before I get into the next Federalist paper, and this is a doozy Federalist paper, by the way. It's Federalist paper number 49. And I hope everybody rushes home this evening and or this weekend, because it's the full Federalist paper. I hope you all read this. But before I get into it, I wanted to expound a bit on the marches we have been seeing and clarify what Platonism is, because this is a word I use. And to give you Plato, because Platonism is basically the ideology that Plato had basically committed to paper in his ancient book, The Republic. If you've never read Plato's Republic, well, you'll get a little insight on it today, because that was the very first book that actually identified the utopian society of communism. Now, there's lots of books out there that have been, published and over history. As a matter of fact, I think Dante wrote a book on utopianism. There's lots of different authors that have written different concepts of utopia. However, what Plato did was he philosophically put down and committed to paper the concept of the state having control of everything, that the perfect world would be that the state would dictate who married who and so forth. So I want to give you some insights on Plato and his Republic and how communism is basically the exact same thing. First, Platonism is what, like I said, what people refer to today as communism, or where the state controls every facet of our lives. Now, we're getting to that point. I mean, can you dictate how many gallons of water you flush your toilet with, or what type of fuel you use for your vehicle? I mean, they're dictating what type of additives to put into your car, regardless of whether it's good for your car or not, such as ethanol and so forth. So anyway, we're getting there and we're creeping along. So that's why it's really important to cover this. So even though our concept of communism and most people's concept of communism came from what people saw Marx and Engels in writing the Communist Manifesto, actually, those two lacked the originality and pretty much copied Plato's Republic like many other utopian writers. Now, they actually got into the planks and a few other things, but they copied verbatim what you needed to do to implement communism. As Benjamin Franklin said, and just as a good warning indication to where we are as a society, and so I'm going to paraphrase what he said. Once the state or government has the ability to give you anything, then it also obtains the power to take everything. You get that? So, in other words, if government is at a point where it can provide you anything, housing, food, money, jobs, whatever, if it has the ability to give you all of those things, then it also has the ability to take all those things from you. To be clear, Platonism cannot work in an immature society, meaning governments must have its tentacles into many things, and it must allow itself to ratchet itself and slowly grow, the concept of boiling the frog, one degree at a time, one degree at a time, one degree at a time. And so there have been efforts of communism where there have been revolts and so forth. But for Platonism to work to do this, government must grow to the point of having a superior projection of power, where they can come in with big, huge armored vehicles and automatic weapons and all sorts of things to subdue any type of outbreak, civil unrest, or, some unsuspecting radical writer that is talking about freedom in the Constitution. They descend upon his home, and next thing you know, the guy just gets hauled away in some paddy wagon. It would probably be a very dark black paddy wagon or armored personnel carrier or what have you, because we're seeing more and more of the police forces being militarized. Whether this is a police force or an army, they must grow to a point to be able to suppress and oppress their domestic opposition. This is why many of the different colonists who came here, who attempted to institute a form of Platonism or communism, or in other words, communal living, where everybody shared equally the labor, everybody shared equally the harvest, and so forth. Each of those times, they failed, and they failed significantly, and it didn't take long. Usually, as a matter of fact, it wasn't just the Pilgrims that did this. Jonestown tried to do this, and 50% of the people died because they all, it's called the tragedy of the commons. And what happens is everybody realizes that, oh, shoot, if you look at that crop, I don't think that's going to be enough to feed everybody. So if I go in the middle of the night and harvest everything that I can take that I'm going to need, the corn and what have you, then I'm taking care of myself and my family. And so when everybody wakes up, some of the harvest is gone and the tragedy of the commons occurs because, oh, there's not that much left. And so somebody else does. And before you know it, the people that were abiding by the system are left with nothing. And those people who tried to game the system are the ones that, you know, may, you know, have a fat belly, but they get caught. And they, you know, get excoriated or they get killed or what have you, depending on what the punishment is. But we see people gaming government all the time. And we have the tragedy of the commons going on right now as we continually ratchet up our debt. We're going to get to a point where we can no longer afford all the things that government is providing. And so when government can't provide to these people that need it and they want more and more and more, and sorry for pounding on the desk, then what ends up happening is they get into the business of taking and taking and taking. And they're not going to take from everybody. They're going to take from those who they need to control, because the billionaires and all those opulent people the government is in bed with, they're not going to go after those people. So even though it's failed in the communal living, even the communist movement in France failed. And most people don't realize that there was a communist movement in France. The communist movement in France actually was the 1790 French Revolution. Where did that revolution come from? It came from the communes, where people were living communally and wanted to basically create an equal share of everything. And they were trying, you know, communes have been part of the hippie movement here. But in France, when all of a sudden there wasn't enough food to feed everybody, well, that became a real crisis. And what did Marie Antoinette say? Because everywhere she was looking, when she found out that the peasants were starving, she said, let them eat cake, because there wasn't enough bread and food to feed the peasants. And that is not her stating that, but it was the starvation that caused that revolution and moved it forward. We've actually seen that in the Arab Spring, where all of a sudden the cost of food went up. When people can't eat, and as a matter of fact, in Aristotle's Politics, the two times when people will revolt is when they can't eat and survive, they will revolt against their government. And the second time is when they've figured out that the government is stealing from them and they're getting rich off of their hard toil and work, then they will revolt as well. And so if you kind of look at the American Revolution, we realize that they were stealing our liberties, because how much was the tax that they were instituting in Massachusetts? It was a tenth of a percent, not 10%, 1/10 of a penny. That's how much the taxes were coming in, but it was spread across almost everything. They started taxing with a stamp tax, because everything had to have stamps, because everything was regulated via stamps that the government had, you know, guaranteed or inspected, or this is approved. And so they started charging everything with stamp taxes. And so that became tyrannical. It was arbitrary, and our forefathers fought against that. Well, so the communist movement in France failed because they didn't realize that they didn't have full control, and that's how Napoleon was able to come up with demagoguery. Well, let me get back to this after this break, because I hear the music, and so do you. And so we will be right back, and I'll get into more of the Platonism and why we need to be concerned about this so we can reclaim the republic. We'll be right back. Okay, well, we're back, and the music that is fading out will go away, but what I'm going to repeat is that as we were going into break, I was explaining how the communist movement in France actually failed. It was a trial run, whatever you want to call it. The communes overthrew the monarchy, and as there was chaos, the communists did not have a level of control and organization to move themselves towards a communal France. And what ended up happening was Napoleon, with demagoguery, and as a matter of fact, again, there's a book you got to read, Aristotle's Politics. He talks about how those with avarice and intent to, you know, take control and to be a despot and or a leader, whether it's politics, gangs, or what have you, despotism is always a follow-up to the demagoguery. In other words, Napoleon started complaining about the system that the communists or the communalists were trying to institute and so forth, and that's why he was able to become the next dictator, not monarch, because he didn't have the bloodline, but he acted like a king, and he cost France dearly, as lots of French died in the post-1812 and so forth, as we know that history. But again, that was actually a communist movement. The global communist movement, which started in 1776 in Germany with a master plan, and yes, there was a master plan in creating a globalist communism or a globalist government that folded everything into the controls of the few. And this was well before Marx's Manifesto. Yep, that's right. Anyway, these globalists, and as a matter of fact, the guy's name was Adam Weishaupt, they learned their lesson from the French Revolution and the failing of socialism in Germany under Otto von Bismarck. A lot of people don't realize that Germany dabbled in its concepts that it was teaching, because many Americans went to the German schools at the end of the 1800s before the Fabians came here, learning about this new communist manifesto, communism, and this new concept in government. It was so cool that Teddy Roosevelt, you know, was really upset that it came to Harvard after he had graduated. And that's one of the reasons why he became such a progressive and wanted to move government into controlling everything. So his trust busters and all of those things, which were unconstitutional, were justified by him because, you know, the government had these powers to do this. He didn't understand the contract and the Constitution and the hard limitations. He truly saw that the pattern had already been laid out for well over half a century, that the government could do anything and everything it wanted to because Marshall said so. Well, anyway, so the grand prize to Platonism, this global Platonism that Adam Weishaupt created, was to subjugate America. You got to remember that in 1776, Adam Smith referred to America as possessing the greatest economic potential. I mean, go read Wealth of Nations. He points to America as if, you know, we get through the revolution and if we get through and rise up on our own, we would be the world's greatest economic power. Also, Washington spoke of the jealousies of hostile nations in his farewell address and that we had to guard ourselves against them, against the immigration and all of these things. We had to fully guard ourselves against these enemies to our liberty because they wanted to see us fail. So anyway, global communism, for it to succeed in America, it had to slowly transform us. And to do this, they had to create a religion and get the Christian churches here to surrender or abdicate their roles and responsibilities. And if you read my first book, I talk about how this actually occurred during the Second awakening in the early 1820s and so, when the Christian church moved from being a supplicant or a providing church to a money-making industry, where churches became tent and nomadic and would travel around, move into a town. They would supposedly heal people, take your money, pack up, and go to the next town. Well, what happens when all of a sudden you lose your job or you get injured when they're not around? You paid them all that money, but they're not there to take care of you, because in the old days, that's what churches would do. When you had a brick and mortar church, they would feed you, they would find help for you, they would, you know, help you get retrained. Churches had a huge role in education, charity, and those types of things in our economy and in our society. Well, as soon as they started creating this money-making machine and it became an opportunity of making money, then you found that the churches became corrupt. And that's why, and I've told you before, go look up the Circle of Protection. Here is an organization that is a combined body of churches that is designed to abdicate their responsibilities to government and put pressure on government to maintain giving you more. They actually meet with, and if you go to their website, they brag about meeting with candidates and talking to their campaigns to ensure that they're not going to touch the welfare state. Why is that? Why is it that they don't want the welfare state to be touched? Because they don't want to spend a penny of their money or their tithes that they receive from you on you. They want to be able to get their next Cadillac, or, I mean, if you look at some of the churches, they're kind of large in organizations, but some of these are small. And so this has been a problem that had been growing since the 1800s, and it's now so well organized that so many of these churches have literally just surrendered their role and responsibility to taking care of their parishioners to the government. They're throwing you to the wolves. Anyway, so I digress. So they had to get these churches to surrender their role and abdicate their responsibilities. But they, like I said, they also had to create a religion. If you haven't heard and you haven't listened to the show when I had Mark Erbach on, I clearly stated the case. In my book and on my Facebook page, I have some articles of the National Secular Church. They created a church without having to build one. They have the doctrine and everything else, and they are enforcing it. When this Scopes trial was tried back in the 1920s, that was an enforcement of secularism. Everything that's been going forward with the removal of church from our society and the enforcement of secularism, that is the secular church. And so if you want to read the articles, and you can garner from these articles that I have on Facebook or read in my book, that we were such a Christian nation, most people don't realize, and I've said this before, that you couldn't even go to court if you weren't a Christian in good standing, because your testimony had no credit with the church. You were considered an infidel. Thomas Jefferson faced the same problem when he was being tried as a deserter during the war as governor. Story talked about why they didn't trust people. As a matter of fact, most public buildings and even private buildings were christened and blessed for the purpose of God or Christ. And so we were a very Christian nation. We just didn't get along well. The Puritans didn't like the Anglicans, and that's why so many people came here. Each of these colonies were being established for disparate reasons, but they still had an organized church that they were utilizing to teach, to take care of, to do the compassionate service, all those community things. And that's what the church's role is supposed to be. And that's how it was set up when the Constitution was formed. So anyway, so they had to create this church. They had to basically lure the churches into abdicating their responsibilities, and so they could start enforcing their religion upon us. And so instead of Monday or Sunday school, they have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday school that you send your kids to learn about their secularism. They also had to lure and or force banks and corporations and, you know, global businesses and so forth to play along. In essence, creating oligarchies of consortiums under the protection of government to control national and global production, pricing, and consumption. And if you look, that's exactly what we have today, is a global economy, and thank you, Bushes, and thank you, globalists, and so forth. I can't tell you that this has been a long time coming, and it started back with Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, and Woodrow Wilson, and Taft, and so forth. That's when progressivism, world wars, world businesses, and so forth really started just taking off. And it's slowly, slowly ratcheted up, and we slowly started losing our liberties. And again, you can read a lot of these details in my book as far as how this kind of transpired. There's some really other good books out there. A. Ralph Epperson wrote a good book called The Unseen Hand. And... well, I can't think of another one, but that's because maybe the music's playing in my ears. Well, so I apologize. I didn't get a chance to finish that thought, but we're going to break. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back. And hopefully I can close on this so we can get into Federalist Paper number 49. We'll be right back after this. Thank you. Okay, so we're back, and I just realized I don't have a lot of time, and educating you and everybody on communism and what we're facing and what's really going on in these streets is paramount, but it also takes some time. And so forgive me, but I think this is very, very important that we understand. And again, like I have my fundamental premise, knowledge is power. And I believe that if you understand why and what they're doing, then it empowers us to stop and correct and actually reclaim the republic and take this country back. Because if not, the mad loonies that are burning the buildings and you know, trying to take all of your stuff, they're going to get away with taking all your stuff. So at some point, you're going to have to get motivated and get involved, whether that's, again, like I said, with your time, money, or what have you. The paramount object, as admitted in the master plan by Adam Weishaupt, going back to the very beginning of 1776, when Adam Weishaupt wrote the charter for the Illuminati, and this is available online, the primary object was very simple. They had to take control of who controlled the thought. In other words, who were the controllers of thought at the time? It wasn't government. Back in the founding of this nation, churches were the ones that controlled thought. And so, or the education system in some of the secular places and so forth. So they wanted to make sure they owned and controlled thought. And so the institutions that control thought are at all levels, the education system, the media and news services, and of course, our entertainment industry. Rockefeller, in his address to the Council of Foreign Relations in 1990 or 1991, and I'm going to try to make a mental note that I'll actually put the link so you can read it for yourself, he bragged about the fact that over the past half century, they were enjoying full control of the news media and thought. In taking control of these institutions, they would use tolerance and Christian values as tools and weapons against us. And Weishaupt even said that in 1776 in the Charter. If you are not familiar with Plato's Republic, this is precisely what he prescribed as the tools of controlling the masses. Or, more appropriately, the slaves of the state. We're not just the masses. We are going to be their slaves. Plato talks about using entertainment as a medium of propaganda to support the inculcation or brainwashing being conducted in the state school system. The media and the news services have an equal part in supporting the narrative. This is why they insult and belittle the opposition and truth. A few examples of this is how they refer to just conspiracies. if you look at it, what Clinton got away with her emails and who was getting access to all of that, that was a conspiracy. And there was a high-level conspiracy within the DNC as well for her election process. I mean, that's what WikiLeaks exposed to us. But did you ever hear the news media say that there was a big conspiracy going on for the Clintons to seize power again through the election process? No, they're not going to use the C word. It validates that, and they want to make you believe that if they use the word conspiracy, then you're thinking, oh, there's somebody that thinks this is whacked out and he's crazy. You know, he's probably off his medication because conspiracies can't exist. And I'm telling you that what the Clintons were doing, there was a lot of conspiracy. With the Veritas Project in the voter fraud, there was conspiracies in that. They're constantly using conspiracies, and that's why they've tried to marginalize the use of that. Also, if you look at what we had learned from McCarthyism, they have used derogatory terms towards that word. But I'm telling you, he was right. If you don't look at what he was doing and how, you know, passionate he was, look at what Hollywood's been doing. They've been basically propagating the agenda of progressivism and so forth. In addition, they're quick, the news media is very quick to control the mantra after any gun violence. And to me, this shows their hand on what they want to do to disarm our public. They also use condescending tones toward opposing ideas and use non-existent psychological terms like homophobia or Islamophobia. These words are simply manufactured to shame and judge conservatives as crazy. They use biases and slants on information to predetermine analysis and conclusions. And across the disparate networks, they all use the same dialogue and words like parrots. An example of this was the propaganda that they fed us about Benghazi. Their influence has been incredible, and this is why Plato spoke very clearly about the need to control all channels of information. Look at how too many protesters are acting. These imbeciles in the thought control industry and the protesters are not protesting for liberty, but they're protesting to become slaves to the state. Apparently, the ability for the useful idiots who are protesting to understand the consequences of their behavior escapes them, and their greed for taking other people's stuff is the overpowering emotion of Platoism or Platonism or communism. Ironically, what resonates the best with Plato's Republic is how the entertainment industry are the monkeys on a string dancing for the organ grinder to guarantee their place in the elite sphere of opulence. Some recent examples of this in the performers in the entertainment industry would be Hamilton, the play, Julius Caesar, the play, or Bruce Springsteen going to Broadway to help propagate and make the progressives feel good about themselves. Whether it's Rosie O'Donnell, Ellen, Jay-Z, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And they're all out to sell how great it is to be slaves to the state. There is a small minority of conservatives in the entertainment industry, and the mainstream media will do everything necessary to excoriate these conservatives if they make a mistake, like Mel Gibson and Bill Cosby, and bury the mistakes of the chosen golden ones. Tim Allen in The Last Man Standing, his show, The Last Man Standing, was canceled on ABC because it showed progressives in a bad light with their bad behavior. McCarthy, as I said, was right. Hollywood was driven by communists, and the past half century proves this. And they're the ones who use blacklists and compel those who want to work to comply or they don't get work. At least that is the predominant MO in Hollywood. My friends, if you cannot recognize what is going on, then consider this. The left has been gaining control, stealing our liberties for well over a century with little to no opposition. We have been realized, or actually when we realized, let me go back here. Remember we talked about the secularism and schools and so forth. When we realized that stopping prayer based on that behavior had actually been integral in making our society more godless and crime increasing and so forth, we're no closer to bringing prayer back into school, folks. But instead of having the Bible and being able to recite or even reference the Bible, we're being taught the Quran in school. I'm telling you, you got to start looking at the signs. They're all over the place. I cannot see anywhere where the loss or Christian values are on any path of being restored until a few things in the past year that Trump has done. And I'm not here, you know, clapping on Trump, but he has done some things to help protect religions and their tax-exempt status and so forth. This is one reason why the left, or the useful idiots, as Lenin would call them, because that's what they were, are using their protests, and that's why the visceral hate is out there, to get these people to continue getting the pressure so that you keep on surrendering your liberties and they can unseat the conservatives. Don't let fear overpower us. Do not stop because there's a little bit of chance we might get a bloody nose. Our liberty is far more sacred than that. And that's why this Saturday, if you make it out to that the Spirit of America rally on the 24th out in Post Falls, please, please stand up for your liberty and please try to support and get involved with these folks. Again, there's, you know, all sorts of things that I'm going to run out of time here. I just want to be clear on the record. I do not support the Convention of States. I talk about a convention, but that is to audit the Constitution, not amend it. As I say, you know, we only have so much time, and time is a finite resource. And so we need to make the best of the resources that we have and optimize, you know, their value and impact in what we're doing. And that way, if we start working together and uniting, we can actually reclaim the republic, initiate republic review, start the audit, and get the federal government back into the framework and scope of the Constitution. I'm telling you, folks, we can do this, and we actually have the constitutional standing, and I'm proving this academically. That's why we're going through the Federalist Papers, and I'm not going to get through it today, but read Federalist Paper number 49. Just the title itself speaks enough, and let me find that title here. I get to it right here. Guarding Against the Cabals of, no, that's not it. We got to get to this, and we'll get to this next week. Federalist Paper number 49. See you in Post Falls. Have a great week, and we'll be back next week to reclaim the Republic with you. Thank you. Bye.